grab your pitchfork, light your torch, and get ready for inciting a riot. Conventional thinking has been warned, because we're going to gather, and we're going to march, and we're going to blow its fucking house down.
Hello, rioters, and welcome back to Inciting a Riot, the podcast. I would be your left-wing dirt-worshipping host, Firelight. Today is episode 159. It is also the very last episode of Inciting a Riot for 2020. We are officially saying goodbye to 2020 here on Inciting a Riot, the podcast. It has been a year, you guys. It's been a year. Oh my goodness gracious. I'm not going to sit here and go through the whole year just myself, because that's what this episode is about. What you guys are about to hear is a roundtable discussion that I had earlier this month with supporters of this show that support the show through Patreon. They gathered together with a couple of special guests, Lilith Dorsey and Patty Wigington, both of whom put out multiple books this year, both very well received amongst the community and reviewers alike. So their appearance was my special gift to our to the supporters of the show. So for folks that could attend, thank you guys so much. For people that do continue to support the show financially and have helped to make sure that the show's bills got paid, whether or not I personally had money to do that or got the make sure that software could get upgraded and mic stands and things like that could happen. So thank you all so much for being so warm and welcoming and supportive of the show. Because it's a Patreon show, I would be remiss if I didn't say that Patreon supporters, of course, heard this show first. If you would like to give as little as $1 a month, you can support independent pagan media like mine. For $1 a month, you get previews of all of the shows via audio. You get them sometimes days, a couple weeks in advance, depending on the recording schedule. And those are available for download or streaming via the Patreon website. For a few dollars more a month, at $5 a month, you get all of the video interviews. So you get to kind of watch me and my guest or guests interact anytime that there is video. More often than not, we have video interviews. Every now and then I have somebody that doesn't want to be videoed. I am hoping to do more roundtable discussions like this for Patreon supporters. There's, of course, also a Discord server that you get access to so that we can have chats about the show, about what's going on in your lives and my lives and things like that. So I'm hoping to build out Patreon to be a really wonderful, interesting community for writers, for people that support the show, and people that want to think deeply about interesting subjects. So if you'd like to support the show, I'd be very grateful if you'd consider giving as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/incitingprojects. But you don't have to give money to support the show. Another great way of supporting the show is by leaving a like and a review on places like Apple Podcasts, sharing the show from the Spotify, from your Spotify app. You can share it to your Instagram stories. You can also share it directly to Twitter. And those kinds of shares and likes and numbers and subscribers and things all help other people find the show, because it boosts it up in the great algorithm of the internet. So the more things that can be bumped up like that, the more people can help find the show. So if you like the show, a really free, good, great, wonderful, free way to support the show is just tell other people about it and maybe share a link to it as well. This year has been intense. Utterly intense. I wrote a blog that seems to have broken pagan publishing, maybe in a good way, I hope. I've done some interviews with some folks that I never thought knew my name, let alone would let me talk to them. I got a freaking book deal with Simon & Schuster. I just, oh my gosh, this year has been the strangest set of events, and I really owe it all to you guys and your unending support of me, of the show, of the work that we're doing here, and you guys continuing to challenge me, to call me out on stuff, to make sure that I'm you know, speaking up and speaking out in areas where I should, and maybe being silent and lifting others up when I shouldn't speak. So I'm so grateful that we have the kind of relationship with one another that, you know, that suit two ways like that, where I'm not just sort of speaking at you, despite the fact that this is a podcast, but that you guys, I learned just as much from you guys as I hope that you learn from the show. Anyways, it's a fairly long conversation, and the topics range from the highs of 2020, the lows of 2020, some big pagan moments in 2020, what TV shows people were watching, what people did for comfort, what hobbies people took up, just sort of what life was like in 2020. So I hope that you enjoy this interview. Thank you guys so, so much for supporting Inciting a Riot this year. I have big, big plans for this show and big plans for my platform in general. Thank you all so much. Remember, I'm going to go ahead and say it at the top of the show because it's a long show. and I'm just going to go ahead and end it at the end of the interview, but of the roundtable. But you can follow me at Inciting a Riot on all forms of social media. There's a TikTok now. There's an Instagram, Twitter. You can find me on Facebook as well. I'm not as active as Firelight, but the page is still there if you'd like to keep up with when new shows are introduced every other Tuesday. Other than that, thank you guys. And here is my roundtable with Patreon supporters featuring Lilith Dorsey and Patty Wigington. Good morning, everyone. Welcome, welcome, welcome to this fun little roundtable discussion for Patreon supporters for the Inciting a Riot podcast. This is my way of thanking you guys for supporting the show and for supporting the work that I've done this year. As a special treat, just in case you haven't seen them, I have some fabulous guests who have become such dear friends of me and supporters of the show this year who have appeared. Each of them have appeared twice, I want to say. Patty Wigington and Lilith Dorsey are here. Good morning, ladies. How are you?
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. I'm so excited. I love this.
I'm so excited as well. Good morning. Good morning. So there's really not a ton of structure to the show. This is just a thank you so much for supporting the show. Let's have a chance to chat and decompress and kind of talk about what 2020 meant to you. highs, lows, how much alcohol you've consumed this year. Just kind of a way to get together with folks that think the same stuff you do, listen to the same things that you do, and just kind of decompress. But first, I do want to say hello to Patty and Lilith. Patty, I'll start with you because you're in my upper left-hand corner. Good morning. How are you? Welcome. Welcome.
I'm good. I'm so excited that you're doing this. I know when you and I talk, it's always like just two people chatting over coffee, which is so much fun. So I'm really excited to see what everybody has to say about this whole wrapping up 2020, which should have been the year that wasn't. So we'll see how that goes.
I mean, this time last year, there were viral posts on social media about like 2020 is going to be the year. Halloween
that's our
Saturday,
year.
4th of July is on a Saturday. Every holiday was on a Saturday. All of our birthdays. Oh, Lilith, look who we have here. We've got Tiffany Newsom joining us. Oh, I'm so excited. good morning. Good morning. But no, 2020 was supposed to be the year with like all of the holidays were on the weekend. Everybody like my birthday was on the weekend. Like this was going to be it. And then COVID. But Lilith Dorsey, welcome back to Inciting a Riot. I am so happy. Thank you so much for being here. How are you this morning?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me back on. This is such a pleasure to be able to wrap up the year this way with you. I'm so excited too. Yay.
I'm so excited. So I want to go around for the folks that have made it here so far. And then when people join, I'll just let them give a quick hello as well. Romy Drix, hello. Hey. How are you? Tell for folks that don't know who you are, tell folks a little bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Romy. I am an unrepentant nerd. I write a little. I write some stories. I write some poetry. I consume so much geek and nerd culture. I'm a witch. And a general dork. So I'm in the shy portion of the program yet, but trust me, once the caffeine is going and the talk is going, I won't shut up. So I'll apologize for that in advance.
And Romy has actually appeared on the show as well. She is a pretty regular contributor to my Samhain special every year. She's a phenomenal storyteller. And one of her stories appeared on the show this year. Okay. Is it Morrigan or Morrigan? Good morning.
Good morning. It's Morrigan, actually. I'm French-Canadian, so...
Oh, I'm going to get that wrong every time I say it.
It's fine. Everybody does anyways. I'm probably going to get a lot of words wrong, too, so that's fair game.
Hey, that is okay. How many folks here know more than one language? Badly. There we go. Perfect. We're all in the same boat. Thank you so much for being here this morning. Katrina, good morning.
Good morning.
With the treadmill or the elliptical or whatever that is in the background, making us all look bad this morning.
Oh, no. That elliptical has held piles of fleece fabric up until about 2 days ago when I started sewing them. So,
well, good morning. So for folks that don't know Katrina, why don't you introduce yourself? You have a little bit of recent news.
I do. My name is Katrina Ray Salas. I am a whole bunch of things. I'm a writer. I'm a knitter. I'm a knitwear designer. I kind of just like to play with glue guns. So I glue and play with everything. And just this week launched my podcast, Stitch and Witch, which is all about the intersection of spirituality and creativity and how they work hand in hand.
And it's wonderful. It's delightful. I have been a big supporter of Katrina's for years. And I
supporter.
Have been...
He came up with the name and he told me to buy the URL, you guys.
I found her URL. I designed her logo. I cyberbullied her for a year into doing a show. So, yes, I get a producer credit, I think. Tiffany Newsom, welcome back. Hello, hello, hello. For folks that don't remember, you were actually on the show as well. The same amount of times, I think, as Lilith and Patty this year. You've been on my show twice this year. So good morning and welcome back. For folks that don't know who you are, why don't you remind them a little bit?
Good morning. Can you hear me? Y'all hear me, right?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Yay. Good morning. I am Tiffany Newsom. I am hoodooist, conjurer, homeschooler, all around activist, super pro-black. What else? This year, I've launched a business. I have selling lashes. What else? Oh, and I got my leke's for those who are in Ifa or know about the Yoruba traditions. I got my leke, so that's like one step into getting further into Ifa.
Oh, that's Lafayette. Lovely.
Lafayette.
That is so lovely to hear. Tiffany and Lilith were on the Black Lives Matter roundtable at the beginning of the summer, which is a show that I gotta tell you, I probably listen to at least once a month, still to this day. It's been such a personally impactful show, and I know that it's touched the lives of a lot of people. So it's good to have both of you back on the show together again. It's just such a wonderful group of people. So 2020, thumbs up for 2020, yes? No? So I want to kick it off today. I'll open it up to Patty and Lilith. Anything fun happen in the pagan community this year? Anything big? Anything important?
I mean, we're all 30 pounds heavier and most of us need liver transplants now. So, I mean.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. I mean, I had some books come out. I know some other people did. So that's fun. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Yes, both Patty and Lilith had books come out this year, and some re-releases of some old books and some celebrations of long careers. Patty, your book came out most recently. Why don't you tell folks about it?
Yeah, so 2020 was a weird book year for me. I actually launched 3 books into the wild in 2020, which has never happened to me before.
Goodness.
I know, it was ridiculous. And people are always like, how did you write 3 books in 1 year? I didn't write 3 books in 1 year. I released 3 books. I've been writing it forever. But they all just kind of happened at the same time, and they all sort of fell into place. And it was really a struggle for me, because normally when I release a book, you know, I'm going to book signings, I'm doing workshops, I'm going to people's shops, I'm getting in my car and driving for a couple of days to go to a festival or a conference or whatever. None of that. And that was a really hard thing for me, but people have still been overwhelmingly supportive. So I've decided that in 2021, knock on wood, if things open back up again, I'm just going to treat all 3 of those like they are brand new in 2021. Yay. We're going to pretend this year never happened. I'll be like, oh, look at my new book launched in April of 2020.
It's a good plan.
It's all you can do. I mean, you know, I'm not a special snowflake. We're all in the same boat. We're all dealing with the same bullshit right now with everything. So, you know, we just kind of move on. But it's been hard not seeing my people, my tribe, because I miss that. I miss it a lot.
You know, I really was excited to have you on specifically for sort of a 2020 wrap up, because one of your books is about self-care. And something that I think that a lot of people get wrong about self-care is that it's a little bit more than just, you know, Netflix and milkshakes and fuzzy blankets and stuff, that there's some deeper dive stuff going on. Not that that isn't self-care, but there's more to it.
Right. And I mean, for some people, Netflix and fuzzy blankets on the couch, I mean, that can be self-care and that's cool. But one thing I think that 2020 has taught me personally is that self-care and personal growth can be measured not just by what we have, but by what we give. So I think focusing on, you know, that self-care, not just for Patty Wigington personally, but what can I do to help other people? What can I do to benefit my community, my neighborhood on a global level, all that other stuff? That was really important to me. And, you know, this year more than ever, because it's brought out the best in people, but it's also brought out the worst in people. And you have to, you know, you have to kind of curb all that.
I completely agree. Sorry, my dog decided to laugh at a ghost.
That's okay. Is it Eggsy?
No, it's Kika. Eggsy's off in a corner somewhere.
Okay.
Lilith, ma'am, you also had some major waves made this year. You had a bombshell book, which I think it's been on everybody's like end of year pagan books list. Such a brilliant contribution to modern pagan thought. Folks, tell folks about what you published this year.
Well, I did 2 this year, which was a first for me. So, you know, I'm kind of in the same boat as Patty, only 2. There's another one coming out later in 2021. So I guess technically, you know, but yeah, it was a lot. The first one was Orisha's Goddesses and Voodoo Queens, which is just sort of, you know, I mean, I did write them both in 1 year, but it's stuff that I've been working on probably my whole life. So that was intense. And it's been an insane success, which is amazing to me because I've been writing books for 16 years now and there's never been an insane success. So I'm happy about that. It's a little daunting because I'm not used to any of that. So I got my first royalty check. It was $48. So for those of you who think you're going to get rich writing.
I always joke when I get my royalty checks for I've put out 2 books of poetry in the last few years. And like, anytime I get a royalty check, it's just like, well, I'm going to go buy Chipotle with that.
I know. It's a life, I tell you, you know, but I mean, for me, it was always about getting the information out there. So, you know, the fact that people are reading it really makes me happy, you know, and I woke up thinking this morning, I always wanted to write my autobiography and I was going to call it a loss of purpose, because my daughter who died, her name was Nia, and that means purpose. So, but I was thinking about how 2020 was for a lot of people also a loss of purpose. There were things that they really wanted to do, and their purpose was sort of, you know, set akimbo, as they say, and made a little wonky. And there were so many things that we were used to doing that we couldn't do anymore. So for me, it's been about approaching these things in a creative way. You know, I was thinking one of the events I do, I've done it for 25 years. So for me to not go to the same place that I've been going every summer for 25 years is just insane to me. It's like, I'm not even myself, you know, and even the people that I know that are close, you know, everybody has to practice distancing. So it's been definitely about getting creative. But on a personal note, I bought a house. So...
Oh, that's such a big deal. Oh, congratulations to you.
Yeah, so I have my own house in New Orleans, and we have a little mini bonfire in our backyard, socially distant, with a lot of people that usually go to that event with me. So for October, you know, almost it's now. And so it was really nice to be able to connect in a safe way and to be able to sort of reach out and do things differently and creatively. And for me, I've also been looking back to the community and looking back to the children. I mean, I used to be a nanny in my day job before I moved down here. So for me, inspiring them through this difficult time. I mean, it's hard enough for us, but for younger people, I can't even imagine some of the things that they're going through. And I've just been trying to reach out to them in any way I can. So in addition to the books, the second one was Water Magic, which is, again, everything you'd ever want to know about water. So that was intense. But I also launched a television show called The Papa Culture Show with my co-host Jason Winslade. So that's a little bit about getting back to my roots and trying to access things that are more mainstream that people might understand and unpack some of that in an academic way. So that's fun. And then I also launched an event, which, you know, whenever they're watching this, it'll already be live. It's going live today. So it's just been about partnerships and things that I can do to give back to the community.
That is so lovely and so wonderful. You both have been so prolific this year and made a lot of really important major contributions to pagan discourse. And that's it's so good to see that people are still creating and putting themselves out there, even in a year when that was difficult. How, just for folks out there, and I'll throw this out to both of you, and then we'll turn it over to the folks that tuned in for us. But Lilith and Patty, how do you stay creative this year? Or did you stay creative this year? Did you feel some kind of urge to basically keep up with yourself? I mean, Patty, you put out 3 books this year. Lilith, you put out 2 books this year. I know what it's like to write multiple books at the same time and have deadlines and all of that. I'm going through that this year. what advice do you guys have for staying creative and not being your own competition? Or maybe, I don't know, maybe that is your motivation.
I'm going to let Lilith go first on this one.
Okay. I mean, for me, creativity is so many different things. So for me, if I feel like I'm getting stagnant, I try and switch it up. So maybe I'll be creative and go plant something in the garden or cook something in the kitchen. You know, I do have a cookbook out there. And so it's just about making something that's creative in a different way. Maybe I don't feel like writing, and that's okay. They've shown us that our brain does not work well if we sit there and chain ourselves to write for 10 hours at a thing. Mm-hmm. That's going to make you kooky, you know? Like, so maybe I'll put on some music from Dr. John, who I used to choreograph for and dance for, and I'll dance around for a half hour. You know, you got to change it up. You got to change it up all the time. And I think that's kind of how I do it. Now, yeah, obviously there's always going to be times where you're like, oh crap, deadline, which I have right now. So
right. Yay, deadline.
Yeah. But that's how I do it, you know.
And I think that's a super valid point. I think if you're somebody who creates, you can't just not create. Like, you don't have a button you can just flip and it's like, I'm not doing anything at all. I mean, you have to be doing something. Otherwise, we go crazy. But like Lilith said, you know, there's other stuff I do. I don't just write. I mean, I do have a full-time non-pagan job in the corporate world. So that sucks up a lot of my, you know, that's my day job. So that keeps me occupied, and I'm allowed the freedom to do a lot of different things and kind of run the show there. But, you know, I paint, I crochet, I do weird things with my hair, you know, all the other ways that I can express my creativity, I can do. But this year I learned something really valuable, which was learning to give myself the gift of downtime. Mm. Like, I don't have to constantly be go, go, go. It's okay for me to just enjoy silence and my own company, which was a little weird. My younger kids moved off to college in the middle of COVID, moved into their houses in the college town where they are about 45 minutes away. So all of a sudden I had a house to myself in the middle of a pandemic. And it was a little weird. But I found that it kind of rejuvenated me because it gave me time to to sort of regroup and figure out what was next instead of constantly be going. It gave me planning time. So now it's like, I'm already mapping stuff out for what comes next, because there's always a next thing when you're somebody who creates stuff. It's just, you never know what that next thing is going to be. So it's allowed me the chance to do that.
I really feel that personally, because, you know, starting working from home in March, it's been a lot of sitting around staring at your unfinished projects.
You and I talked about that, because I've worked at home since 2013. You know, and back in March, everybody was like, I'm going to eat all my snacks today. And I'm like, oh, honey, no, don't do that. Don't do that. You got to pace yourself, you know?
It's looking at all the canvases that I bought that I intended to paint on and then never did. And it's looking at all the hobbies that I said, oh, I'm going to take those up, and then I never did. And now I'm sitting here amongst them all the time.
I've got 800 miles of yarn waiting for me to do shit with it. So... Katrina's on it.
Listeners who tuned in, you can use your little react button down there so that we're not all talking at once. But how did you guys find a way to stay creative? And we'll just turn it over to you guys.
I have lots of thoughts on that.
Oh, okay. Okay, Katrina, you go first then.
Well, I'm on an iPad, so the React button is missing. Oh. But this year was the second year of my MFA in creative writing, and trying to complete a master's degree during a pandemic is, by the way, a nightmare. And I started in January with the plan that my master's thesis was going to be. I had done my third semester project on contemporary theater and social class. And my plan was that my thesis was going to be a full length play. And about halfway through June, I went, you know, that is never going to happen in a pandemic. I don't have the attention span for a long form anything right now. So I ended up with a thesis that is 10 minute plays. Because it just wasn't going to happen, but I just had to face my creativity in little bits like that. I couldn't face it in big chunks. I had to go with small things.
That's good. Tiffany, I think I saw you, raising your hand. How have you dealt with creativity this year, with, keeping up with yourself? Oh, there we go.
Okay. Creativity. Oh my gosh. So creativity for me was finding outlets and like I'm a jack of all trades. So actually like I'm going to do something and I'm going to stick with it has always been my struggle. So like 2020 was really like, okay, if you're going to do it, this is the time to do it, which is why I launched my lashes business, and also why I officially took steps into e-file was actually like, okay, I've talked this talk, I've done all of this, let's actually get into something, because I am terrible at it. I will forever just look and flow, and I think that's my Libra and inconsistency and now committal.
So Tiffany, you and I talked earlier this year about being a homeschool parent. And I know that you've sort of joked on social media a little bit that a lot of your life really hasn't changed because you guys were always at home. But now being on the other end, or not the other end, but now being on this side of quarantine, has anything really changed for you guys? Has there been a bigger impact to your lives because of the pandemic, because of quarantine?
Yes, because people don't realize how social homeschoolers are. Mm. So the fact that we don't have the ability to be social has given us cabin fever. Mm. Like the stagnant of the things that we used to do as homeschoolers, even though it's, oh yeah, we're home. We were never really home. We were always doing something, whether it was dance, whether it was beta, whether it was volunteering, parks, libraries, and all that pretty much got shut down. So it's like, what do we do now? finding the creativity and just the energy to really just stay focused and the motivation to, okay, yes, we still have to do school, because at a certain point you just, I'm tired. I'm ready. I'm over it. Like, you know, obviously people get over it when it comes to being in public school, but it's a whole nother thing when you're the main teacher and you have three children who are like, they need something to do. And you're like, okay, yes, you should be doing something structured. Oh crap. It's me that's supposed to be giving you something structured to do. And there's no outlet or anything like that. It definitely affected us in that way, because all their little things that they could do, they can't do anymore. So yeah.
Yeah. We're social creatures, and I think no matter who you are, what was it? I heard about a group of monastic monks in France this past week. NPR just did it, and I'm about to bastardize the news story. But the pandemic didn't really affect them as far as like anybody getting COVID, because again, they just like, they all live in their little cells and they make their booze and stuff, but like that's their business, is selling booze. And like even the pandemic affected them, because now they're like booze sales are like crazy.
Wow.
Anybody else with thoughts on remaining creative or keeping up with yourself or anything like that, just raise your hand or unmute yourself. Go ahead.
I guess that's me.
That's you. Yes, I didn't want to mispronounce your name. To be like Murugan.
It's fine. Well, I'm an essential worker, so I kept working. And the creativity side was really my outlet. I knit, and I knitted a lot this year, like a lot. I couldn't focus on anything. Like, I have a blog on French Canadian magic, and almost nothing got updated because I just couldn't focus. Like, my creativity was everything. I needed to work with colors, work with textures. I tried a few different fibers. I painted with my daughter. She's in a kindergarten. Yeah, I think I said kindergarten. And she plays with colors. She plays with the textures of the paint. And I just sat with her and did the same thing because it looked so relaxing. So she was in the moment, she was focused, and she had fun. So I just followed her in there, and everybody's getting knitted this year because it's all my backlog from March that I have to give everybody because it has to go out of the house. So yeah, it's been my sanity line. I had to do it, and I didn't try anything new. I kind of tried to learn to crochet, but I just stuck to what I knew, and tried different techniques in this room.
That's wonderful. It does sound that you sound like you were able to really, really be very creative this year. As I know, it's like, oh, I wasn't creative, but I painted, I knitted, I tried multiple fabrics. That's amazing. That's something worth celebrating. Romy, I think you had something as well.
So one of the things I kind of do to kind of force myself to like always write is me and two other friends, we have like this poetry prompt like website that we manage. So I had made a commitment to myself. It's like, even if it sucks, I am fucking writing a fucking poem every week. And sometimes they really did suck. But it was interesting to me once letting myself off the, you know, like, no, I'm going to write, how I let myself be angry. Like, there's like a series of poems that like no one has seen, like that. You're like, this is just too angry for the website. I'm not doing that. And like put them together. And I'm like, you know, this is a little bit better than the stuff I thought that would be a collection before. I'm like, I'm so angry. I don't know. Giving myself permission to feel what I feel and letting that come through in my creativity has been enormously helpful. I think in the beginning of this pandemic, there was a certain sense of denial I had around things. I think I kind of like put myself in like a fugue state. Like it was like, no, I'm not feeling it. I'm not, you know, it's just another day. I've already worked at home, you know, from years. I know the drill. I've got this. And like, no, I don't got this. And as I noticed some of my stuff getting angry, like, you know what? I feel fucking better. And kind of letting myself be honest and using the art is like, maybe, okay, it doesn't have to be good. It just has to be honest. I finally started working on the big book project that I had promised myself I was going to start at the beginning of this year. So I've like been serious about it for the last couple of weeks and writing with an awesome writing partner on Sundays. I don't know who that is, like with our bizarre experiment, but I'm having so much fun with it. Yes, Katrina, that's you.
Our abomination.
Our abomination.
That's what Firelight calls it.
So we like have appointments where we Zoom, but we don't talk. Like that's the whole thing. We like check at each other. We wave hi. And then for 2 hours, we're just writing. You know, and it does, and like my whole thing is it doesn't matter if it sucks. It doesn't matter if I'm like having like my characters say something really stupid and short. I just need to get the damn thought out there. And if it's worth saving and cleaning, it'll be fucking worth saving and cleaning.
I just need you all to know that the reason why I call this as an abomination is because you're inviting people who haven't seen other humans to be on a Zoom call with other humans, and they can't talk to those humans or have any kind of social interaction with those humans. We're just supposed to sit quietly and like quietly write. And like that, I feel like that's hell. Like hell is like me in a glass box with people I could talk to and want to talk to right over there, but I'm not allowed to. I have to sit and write for 2 hours. That's hell.
Oh, you poor extroverted Aries.
It's mean. It's
Taurus life.
It's mean.
A lot of Gemini. See, now it's coming out. Now it's coming out. Because it's like...
But like Romy and I talk every day. So... spending Sunday like talking, but only not talking, like that works for us because we actually
know how
do
to
talk
not
every day.
Talk. That's bizarre. Speaking of somebody that can't not talk, Patty, you literally wrote the book on witchy self-care this year. So I want to ask you, what are some of your best big tips, either from your book or just generally speaking, for keeping up with self-care, both personally and magically?
You know, it's, I was going to be like, you know, like, well, you have to drink a lot, and, you know, but I mean, that's been done to death. That's how we spent March, April, and May. Here's the thing I've learned about self-care is we spend our whole lives being taught that you've got to put other people first. And it's really important to take care of other people, and that's okay. It's good. It makes us who we are. But sometimes we tend to lose ourselves. And I think especially for women, because there is sort of this extra responsibility of, you know, I have to schedule the kids' doctor's appointments. I have to make sure everybody's got the right pairs of shoes on before we leave the house. I have to make sure everybody's fed and not feral, you know, all this other stuff. We tend to put our own needs to the back burner. And for me personally, it took a really long time to understand that it was okay to do things that were just for me. Just for me. And it was okay. You know, it was, if I wanted to get in the car and go away for a weekend with my girlfriends, I could do it. My kids have a perfectly good other parent that I could leave them with. They don't need me up their ass all the time. Of course, now they're adults and they are feral, so it doesn't really matter. But it was really, that was so illuminating. And it allowed me to create, I've sort of cultivated this life for myself where I do things that make me happy. And I surround myself with people who aren't assholes. And if you can do those two things for yourself,
teach me your ways.
Self-care just falls into place. You know, it really, you know, and when I say I do things that make me happy, I don't do them at the expense of other people. It's things that, you know, like if I feel like walking around an antique mall, you know, not in the middle of a pandemic, but like in normal years, I can do it. You know, I can go out and I can walk in the woods. I can sit under a tree. I can get in my car and just drive through the countryside and look at cows. I can do any of those things if I want to. And I don't have to ask anyone's permission. And that's the key to self-care, is like you give yourself permission to do these things. And then, like I said, part two is, you know, you surround yourself with people that lift you up instead of bringing you down. People that are your tribe. People that bring you joy. It's like the whole Marie Kondo thing, you know, get rid of stuff that doesn't bring you joy. That includes people as well. So once you do these two things, self-care just happens on its own. It just does. It's like, I don't even think about it. I just do.
I really feel like I need that on some kind of, like I feel like I need that, like stitched on like a pillow somewhere, like do stuff that makes you happy process. And don't surround yourself with assholes. And if you can figure out that.
But you have to allow yourself that. You have to allow yourself the gift of getting rid of the toxic people, the nasty people, the mean people, the people that think it's okay to do terrible things and still take up space in your life. Mm. Hell with those people. Who needs them? Blech.
So what's your advice then for folks that recognize that they have a toxic person in their life? And maybe this is something that we can open up to the group. Maybe this is a good group question. But what's your advice for someone who recognizes that they do have a toxic person or a toxic trait or a toxic something? I mean, it's not necessarily people that we need to get rid of. Sometimes it's traits, mm-hmm. sometimes it's situations, jobs, you know, that kind of thing. But you've recognized toxicity in your life and you want to get rid of it. But boy, howdy, it's, you know, taking that first step sometimes is really rough. What's your advice for jumping in?
Yeah, you know, the first key is to recognize that the person or thing is toxic. I mean, that's the key. It's like, if you're around person X and you're always unhappy when they leave, or you're happy when they've left, but you're unhappy when they've been around you, then, you know, that should be a big red flag. Sometimes we can't get rid of people. Okay. You can't get rid of your boss. You can't get rid of your sister-in-law. You can't get rid of, you know, that weird guy who lives next door who does all the strange things and shouts at you from the driveway. But what you can do is you can change the way you respond to them. You can change your coping strategies. And that's easier said than done. But that awareness that here is the problem. If I can't get rid of it, here's how I'm going to cope with it. If I can get rid of it, here are the steps I need to take to get rid of it. And it does require a certain degree of self-awareness. And that can lead to some uncomfortable truths that we discover about ourselves. But you know, picking up on the fact that this thing is the toxic thing, whatever it is, it's one of many steps, but it's the first one.
Does anyone ever else have any thoughts on removing toxicity? Oh yes, ma'am, Lilith. Let me get. I'm ready. School me.
Well, we do have spells for getting rid of, you know, your sister-in-law or your neighbor, yes. or the rest of it. And for me, I think the key is really, you know, we've got a aloha called Aida Wado, and she's the crown of the rainbow. So it talks about going through these storms, going through these difficult situations, and sort of seeing the rainbow and believing that something better is possible. And I think that's where people get caught up in it. They're scared to get, my godson had to get rid of his boss. And what ended up happening was he got a whole new job, better pay, better opportunities, more kinds of things. So, you know, maybe he was married to staying in that job, but the reality is the universe gave him something better, and he doesn't have to deal with those toxic people anymore. And I think that some of us, we get so used to the familiar, we get so used to our patterns, and there's safety in that. But we also have to embrace that, you know, let's jump off the cliff kind of feeling, because something better is out there for you. And I think that a lot of times for me and also my clients, they're just so hanging on to, well, I have this thing, maybe it's not so bad, you know, and they just don't want to have that moment of, wait a minute, it could be way better. And I really deserve for it to be way better, but I've got to make space in my mind for that in order for it to happen. And that's the thing I see being a real block, especially now when there's so much where you can go down that spiral loop of negativity. And writing the Water Magic book too really helped me with this, because it had to do with, okay, now water can give life, we're all born in water, and then it can also take life. You can have a tsunami or a hurricane or something like that, and that's been ever present here now that I'm living in New Orleans, you know. So it's this relationship that you have with these feelings, you have with these deep emotions, that you have with the ancestors, and also that you have with your future, that you have to keep in mind when you're making these tiny decisions. It doesn't have to be a big decision. It could be something as simple as, you know, I had a toxic person try and come back in my life yesterday. I was like, I'm not answering that. I could answer it, oh, well, you did this and you did this and you said, no, it's damaging my calm, like they would say in Serenity. Firefly. But, you know, I'm not damaging my calm for this person. You know, they can stay over there and that's perfectly fine with me. The past is the past and my future is going to have something where I don't have toxic people in it.
I love that. We're just going to add that to the pillow that we stitch. Don't damage your
This
calm.
Is going to be an amazing cross-stitch sampler pillow. It really is.
And I want Lilith in on the pre-order list.
Right. And Lilith made some really valid points. I mean, that's the thing. It's like you have the ability to take whatever steps you need to take. Fear is a big block for a lot of people. You know, we're afraid. You know, how many times have you heard somebody say, well, I really want to end this relationship, but then I'll have to raise my kids alone. Okay, there's your fear right there. You know,
but then the other part to that as well, Patty, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but sometimes it's recognizing that the thing you're afraid of is the thing you're already living with.
Right.
Because like if I'm afraid of getting rid of this person because then I'll be raising my kids alone. Well, aren't you already?
Right. Exactly.
You're raising your kids with someone that you can't count on and you're having to deal with them as well. So wouldn't it be easier to just raise your kids on your own without the burden of this other person?
Yeah. Do you want to be miserable by yourself? Or do you want to be miserable because of another person? I mean, you know, it's six of one, half dozen of the other. But yeah, fear stops us from doing a lot of things and learning to overcome that fear. That's when you step outside your comfort zone. And that's scary for a lot of people, for most of us.
It certainly can be. Anyone else have any thoughts on this topic? Miss Tiffany, go ahead.
Toxicity. Oh my goodness. Okay, so I haven't spoken to my mother since, what is that? I graduated in 06. So I haven't talked to my mother since 06. And before
that's
you.
Older to me.
Yes, it is. As you hear my oldest in the background.
I love your children. They are wonderful people.
She came out here when she heard your voice. And she was like, oh, I want to hear. So noisy. Nosy and noisy. But you're still talking. Okay, anywho. So I haven't talk to my mother or have any communication with my mother because she is toxic. And I often have like her family members come and be like, you should, you know, still talk to Pat and you should still, you know, talk to your mother because X, Y, Z. And I'm like, but why? At the end of the day, what is she going to bring back into my life? Like what? There was a reason why I cut her out. And yes, she is my mother. And yes, I'm an only. So, you know, I only have but two parents. So it's like, yes, you know, you have all those things, but it's like, is that something you want to bring back in? A lot of people, they're like, they'll let time go by and they'll say, oh, well, you know, this person must have changed by now. And then they're the exact same way. Or you hear stories and you're like, oh, but you know, they'll be different with me. Why are you thinking that time is going to change things? Sometimes time is time and it shows. People's personalities don't change. A lot of, aside from my mother, I have another friend who I knew for like at least 10 some years and she flipped her lid and we were like, okay, you can stay over there. And again, time, you were like, okay, she's trying to come back in, but you're still playing the same game. A lot of people, they think that toxicity is, oh, if I just step away from them, you know, they'll know better or they'll learn on their own. And that's often not the case. People are toxic and either they're not wanting to change or they're toxic and they know about it and they want you to deal with it. And it's like 2020 has definitely shown me that even as time passes and, you know, everybody is fearing of life and reconnections and trying to maintain those connections, sometimes it's just not worth it. Sometimes it's okay to let it go. And embracing that is something that definitely 2020 has shown me.
I think that that's such a powerful lesson. I've done a lot of writing over the years on the notion of forgiveness, the sort of societal expectation of forgiveness, the fact that when you are asked for forgiveness, suddenly the onus is on the victim of providing absolution. I know, and a lot of us here have intersectional oppression in some way or other. But personally, I grew up real, real, real gay in a real, real, real small town. We had 585 people in 9 Baptist churches and I had a lot of hell that I went through as a kid. And you know how every now and then there's those like Upworthy videos and like viral videos of like, oh, this was my bully and now we're friends because he reached out to me and I forgave him and now it's all good and we're good and I feel better now. And after one of those goes viral, my personal Facebook page, like my mundane Facebook page, tends to get filled up with like friend requests from people that I used to go to school with and like elementary, middle school, and high school. And like, I'll get these DMs of just, hey, I was a shithead to you and I'm better now. Can we be friends? And I'm like, I'm so glad that you've gone on that journey. Like, good for you. I don't need this though. Like, something big that I had to learn or unlearn or unpack or something about myself is that I can be fine over here and you can be fine over there, but we don't need to be fine together. Just because you're fine now doesn't mean that I'm fine with what you did to me or how what you did impacted the whole rest of my fucking life. Like, the whole rest of my life. And, you know, my trust issues and my trauma responses and how much of who I am is directly related to the fact that you didn't let me have a place of safety in a time when I needed a place of safety. I couldn't go to school. I couldn't go to church. I couldn't be at home. And now you want me to be like, I saw a video and now we're okay. And I'm so sad and I'm a better adult now. Like, then, okay, go be a better adult to a kid that needs you to be a better adult now. But I'm not going to be your absolution. And I think that one of the most important things that I have ever learned is that you don't owe anybody absolution. If you feel like giving it, if that's a place in your life where you are right now, super good for you. But it is just as valid to say, you know what? I'm glad you've gone on that journey. I'm not there with you. But I'm glad that you've gone on that journey and you don't need to provide, you don't need to say, I'm, you know what, you're forgiven. You don't need to. That is just as valid. It's just as valid.
I think that's huge. I got a Facebook message. It's been a few years ago from this girl who was just completely merciless to me in middle school. I mean, she made my life a living hell. And I was kind of like, she just wants to like be friends and like sell me her, like her multi-level marketing stuff, I'm sure.
Please sell me your Herbalife.
Right. Please sell me your doTERRA or whatever. But I was like, you know, I just ignored it. I mean, like, I wasn't even going to give her the face of an answer because it's not my job to make someone feel better about the shit that they did 30 years ago. That is not on the list of things Patty needs to do.
Nope.
So I was just like, boop, click and delete. I was like, I'm over it. Again, I don't make space in my life for people that are jerks. I just don't.
Right.
And as far as I'm concerned, there was nothing to gain by interacting with this person.
And I recognize that people can grow and people can change. It's just, I can also grow and I can also change and I can be the kind of person that doesn't need to give you that. I don't need to give that to you. I don't owe you that. And I don't, and it's nothing negative about my character that I don't want to give you that. I don't owe that to you. We don't have to be that to each other. You can go be good over there and I can be good here. And that's fine. That's good.
No, I think that position is really liberating, you know, and I think I had to come to it because you're right. That is the trope for, you know, the general pop population about things, you know, but I had a really good friend in the pagan community. We were best friends since high school, over 20 years. And she ended up trying to 5150 me and had me locked up in the mental ward took me a day and a half to get out because I'm not insane. But, you know, and she's a Black person. So to call the cops on a Black person, six of them bust into my house with guns drawn, you know, and to bring it back to 2020, this year really made me realize that I have people that totally.
I'm sorry, I have a lot to.
Yeah. No, it's, and I got it, you know, all the stuff with Black Lives Matter. She tried to sort of come back in and be like, oh, I'm really sorry. I didn't realize what sending the cops to your house was going to do to you. And I'm just like, wait a minute, this is epically toxic. And if I let this person back in, who knows what's going to happen to me? I could end up dead. And this is the situations that I've usually been in. So it's hard for me to still, because, you know, I want her to stay far away and I still have to deal with her at events and things like that. So, but you know what, when somebody asks, oh, what do you think about this person? I'll tell them, I'll be like, you know, they're going to call the cops on another Black person and possibly get them dead. So, you know, you could have them in their organization or not, but you know, that's just where I am with it. I don't want to be anywhere near this person. And that's my self-care.
And I think it's good that you sort of bring up that it's like, I don't need to prevent you from growing. I don't need to prevent you from an opportunity. I don't need to, I mean, you go be successful. You go thrive. If you're, sure. If you're a leader now, go be a leader now. We just personally, the two of us, don't need to interact. And that's valid. And that's fine.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've all got a lot of topics on this, but I know Lilith has a hard out sooner than some of the rest of us do. So yes. I wanted to ask you, Lilith, this year, and several of us here on this call have been on some interviews this year with me where we've talked about some of these things. But this has been a big year of uncomfortable conversations for the pagan community. I incited some of those riots, but they happened also without me as well. And there have been a lot of conversations that I think we weren't having because we were all so busy showing everybody how super pagan we were and putting on big events and things. And I think without those happening this year, we had a little bit of space to maybe have some tough talks about what our community looks like, what it should look like, where it's going, and how to get there. And I want to ask you, because a lot of what you do is advocacy, not only for Black people, but Black pagans, for minority spiritual traditions that aren't necessarily given as much visibility, or especially as much own voices visibility in the pagan community as others. How do you think being on this sort of this end of some of those conversations this year, how do you think that those conversations have helped, hindered the pagan community at large?
I mean, I think they're always important to have these conversations, obviously. That's like a given. And I think that there were certainly some people that hadn't thought about these things. But I think time will tell whether or not there really is any change. You know, there was a lot of ways, and I think this is larger, just not with BIPOC and, yeah. You know, the other community, but there's a way in which everything is making more of a gap and a widening. And in some ways that's a good thing. And in some ways I think it's not a good thing. So, and there's still all of this sorting out, and I still see a whole bunch of people secretly attacking people for trying to speak out for what I feel is really equality and justice in situations, you know, and that scares me because, again, I think to the young people, I think to our youth, I think, are they going to feel welcome? And if these conversations are happening behind closed doors and people are still having their racist ideas and their, you know, whatever privileged ideas, then it's never going to be welcoming for those people. And that makes me sad. And even within the community, I see more division. And again, this is the hard conversation because ain't nobody trying to hear that, you know, but it's true that there's more, you know, division between, I know you spoke out and that was not well received by.
I mean, it was, to be fair, okay. It was well received. Okay. It was just, there was a very loud vocal minority of folks that didn't want that conversation to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that it was unfortunate that they decided to turn it into something else rather than the actual conversation that it was. And I think that they're always going to try and find a way to do that. And that makes me sad. And these are the people that have the most publicity, the most attention. It's almost, I have a friend that calls it an evil cabal, you know? And in a way, it does function like an evil cabal. And that's distracting what the real importance is here. And that makes me really sad.
I think that some of the things that I've taken away and some of the stuff that I've talked about recently on the show is that I've learned that there are people out there that are looking for an audience. And then there's folks out there that are looking for a community. There's looking there. And I think that, you know, you two fine ladies are a wonderful example of people that are building community and are unafraid of sort of unpacking some of the difficult stuff. But like, it's not just, you know, BIPOC representation in pagan publishing. Like that's not just some of the tough conversations we've had. I know Wicca just in the last few weeks has started to really publicly unpack transphobia inside of some of its corners and really dealing with the gender binary. And this conversation has come up before for Wicca, but I feel like it's coming back up again in sort of a deeper way. I know Thorn Mooney has been doing a lot of talking about that and sort of raising up trans voices inside of that community. And I think that's brilliant and beautiful. And I hope to have some of those folks on the show.
I love Thorn.
Oh man, yeah. What a great voice, what a great advocate for her religion and for just pagans in general. But yeah, I think that it's been sort of a big year. For folks that maybe listened to some of these conversations, that watched some of these conversations, what was it like, maybe not being a big blogger or something and participating, what was it like to watch this discourse happen?
Well, it was really uncomfortable, but I think it had to. We have to learn as white people to be uncomfortable, because otherwise nothing's gonna change ever. I'm in Canada, so we're so racist, but people die a bit less, except for the First Nations. And I could translate what I could hear in Black community in the U.S. to what the First Nations have been saying for years and years and years. And yeah, we're not better than anybody. Like, and there's a lot of that in Canada. Oh, well, that doesn't happen here. Well, it bloody does. It does. But there's less publicity. There's less voices. We just don't. Yeah. And I think it did give a voice to the First Nations. I hear more of it. I hear more of it in the political discourse too. And yeah, there's so much to do. But for the first time in my life, I feel like the people who are oppressed are leading the discourse. Is that what white people think they should do? They are actually listening to people going through it. And if just that, I didn't think I would live to see that. So thank you to everybody who's been screaming for decades.
I do want to ask, because we do have multiple people of color on the call right now. Do you feel like you guys are leading the discourse this year on some of these more uncomfortable topics?
Fuck no. That's my short answer. No, because I still think, I don't know if it's the way the algorithms work or because people just feel safer listening to a white person about Black discourse. But when I see me write something and I see somebody else write something, even both on Pathos, which is, you know, a huge platform, I see the white person will always get shared 10 times more than I will.
I remember and some one of the things that you and I would sort of DM each other about were the statistics, the different statistics between the blog that I wrote and then the roundtable discussion that we had, and the number of people that would read and share that blog versus the number of people that would read that would listen and share that podcast episode. And just that disparity is huge. It's huge.
Yes, it was a huge difference.
It's a huge difference. I mean, if 20,000 people will read a blog and then like 500 people will listen physically listen to Black people talk, it that really shows the kind of disparity that we have. I'm sorry, Romy, you were you had yourself unmuted there for a second.
I'm not a big name in the pagan community. I am only a teeny tiny little fish among people who like read my writing. I'm not shy about my political positions. And if anyone's ever read my poetry for a while, it's pretty obvious. There are some things that are bothering me. And watching the conversation in the pagan community, Everything that Lilith said, it's interesting to see who gets the most attention about some things and who gets sidelined. And it's I wish it was different. But the sad thing, it mimics exactly what I see in real life, like in different work situations, like, oh God, you know, like the white person's going to get, you know, notice of, you know, so much more than, like, I don't know, the hardworking silent person of color who just does their job, or even in the Latino community. I mean, I've had some really tough discussions with family members around this because that's another thing that happened in 2020, like kind of being firm about stuff. It's like, no, some things are wrong. And just because you're a little lighter skinned or you managed to get your language a little less accented and you managed to hide your roots a little bit, you're not fucking better than everybody else. And it doesn't mean you can be like, oh, these are not us. This is fucking us assholes. Sorry, I get a little passionate about it. Because I've had fights with members of my own family, like really hard ones. I think my favorite one is, you know, people are trying to tell me, it's like, you're white, Romy. I'm like, really? I'm fucking white. All right, sure, I'm white. Sorry, I have feelings.
I'm sorry, Tiffany, did you? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I am not nearly as involved in the faith community as I used to be. I know when we first met, I was like heavily into it. And now I've pretty much stuck out a lot of it because it's just a lot of white people. I just could not find that comfort space to be like, okay, I'm black and I'm Wiccan, or I'm black and I'm a witch. It just wasn't there for me. That understanding, that respect, that just non-microaggressions, I just could not get with it, which is what brought me to hoodoo, which I'm not mad at because, you know, hoodoo has become my whole life. If you see back here in the background, you see my little ancestor altar, like, it has become my life. I have now raised my children who, if y'all saw in the background, my daughter was helping do the water and the coffee because we make sure that it stays right. But the pagan community as a whole, I know I personally stepped out of. I am somewhat lunated because I have y'all as friends, so I can see it. But seeing, like, even years later that nothing really has changed, like, there's no, for me, it's like there's no reason to go back. Even if I should, I don't see, like, a personal driven force to be like, yes, I should start speaking back into it. I will speak on it if it's related to me, as in I'm a minority practicing, since I do practice now ATRs and diasporic ATRs. So, you know, there's going to be some synopsis, and there's a whole lot of white people that get into hoodoo, and it's like, why are you here? And if you're here, why aren't you, like, what is your motivation for being here besides trying to steal and trying to make it all into, oh, hoodoo is Wicca, and Wicca and witchcraft are all just all shared together, and we just have these shared roots of everything. And it's like, no, we don't. Hoodoo is its own thing. You know, if you're going to be a hoodooist and you're white, you know, we've had this conversation before, like, know your roots, know where it came from. I honestly can't say that I could go back. I could stay, okay, yes, I would purposely go to a Wiccan or a pagan conference and be comfortable there anymore, because I'm going to get all these either microaggressions, or people going to be like, oh, I practice hoodoo too. And then they pull out like this thing and they're like, yeah, I got it from this Native American. And I'm just like, what? I don't know if I could hold my tongue long enough to be there.
You hold your tongue?
I do hold my tongue. Stop looking. Yes, my daughter says sometimes. I have a verifiable witness that I do sometimes hold my tongue.
Tiffany, I want to come back to you, but I do want to recognize Miss Lilith has a hard out. Lilith, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks for being one of our special guests. I appreciate it. Buy Lilith Dorsey's books. Her two books this year were Water Magic and Orisha's Goddesses and Voodoo Queens. Both out this year, both doing really well, and both very special to the pagan community and to me personally. So thank you so much, Miss Lilith.
Thank you. Much love.
Thank you so much. Corey Hutchison of New World Witchery actually just joined us. Hi, Corey. But he actually brought up a point that I was about to bring up as well. So I know that we've sort of talked about that this year we've dealt with some public unpackings of some difficult things. On the flip side of it, though, where were spaces that you personally found community? Because I know, you know, when Corey and I, or even Patty and I, were sort of coming up in the bygone days of the early 2000s pagan interwebs, there was Witchbox articles and maybe some personal blogs and your podcast that would get 5 listeners or something. But these days we have so much more access. Social media has really blown up. And honestly, I think 2020 was a huge year for pagan community being found in other spaces. There are TikTok folks with a million frickin' followers that are talking about witchcraft and all sorts of different kinds of practices. And Latinx witches, Romy brought that up, on Instagram with a million frickin' followers and talking stuff that is just, they aren't filtered through a publisher. They aren't filtered through an editor. They're just giving their authentic practice and their authentic selves. So where are spaces that you all personally have found community outlets or knowledge this year?
I personally, Instagram has been an amazing one. Mm-hmm. Instagram and Spotify, they both have been outside of TikTok, because I didn't even realize that TikTok, like, I had my best friend, she was sending me stuff about the witch TikTok, or TikTok,
I think Witch Talk.
Yeah, Witch Talk. There we go.
I just started on Witch Talk this past week, and it's,
oh my gosh, and
I have a hate relationship with it.
Yes, it is a complete time suck. But Witch Talk, I didn't even like realize, because when I first got on TikTok, it was purely because I'm Black. It was purely to find all the pro Black TikTokers and like bushing them up and like making my time like this. And then I saw Witch Talk and I was like, bruh, where have y'all been? So I've been following them. And then Instagram, there are so many people on Instagram who obviously they still have some interface with Facebook, but they're more so on Instagram. So like seeing Instagram, and then a lot of people, they're moving over and making podcasts into Spotify. And I'm like, these are all new people and I learn new things and I'm just happy. So when I'm not on Facebook, I will absolutely be time sucked into Instagram, TikTok.
As much as I've been on, like, as aggressively online as I think I've been in the last several years, I was very late to Instagram or YouTube or TikTok or anything. Like, I was just like, nope, I'm good with Facebook. I'm good with Twitter. I am old.
I have them all.
I have my social medias and I don't need to learn new things. But man, there is a lot out there, and I like just stepping my toes into it in the last couple of months. Like, I just got on Instagram this past, the past few months. I just started a TikTok account and I hate it in the last week. But there's a lot out there. Romy, I think you brought it up in the chat. What Instagrammers are you loving?
Oh, Badmouth Bruja. I'm trying to remember, like, you know, because there's like a bunch of, basically, I went one day, it's like anyone who had like Bruja, Brujita, there was like Witches of Brooklyn that was like all Latinx. Like, I started following them because, oh, okay. So like, my parents did their damn best to Americanize me and my brother. It worked on my brother. My brother's is like white as cottage cheese sometimes. Like he goes out of his way to just be like, no, I don't know what this is. Take that, you know, take those fried bananas. He's like, those are platanos, you know, asshole. It's like, give me your Inca Kola and platanos if you're not having it. But it's been a way to kind of almost like reclaim in a weird way. I mean, it sounds dramatic, like stuff that my parents kind of kept me from. Because I know my grandmother was kind of into herbalist stuff, and my parents were like, no, that's not, like, my parents were really about being really white and really scientific.
But see, Romy, you actually echo something. I talked to a Japanese own voices Reiki practitioner earlier this year named Marika Clymer.
And I follow her.
I love her.
Because I feel like we're on similar fucking journeys.
But that's the
and
thing.
And the fact that I'm interested in Japanese everything too. So that's another
She said something to the effect of like, you know, don't blame the colonized person for being colonized or something like that. Like it's just this idea that like, you know, oh, this person has internalized whiteness so much, or oh, this person has internalized heteronormativity so much, or something like that, and having to sort of unpack those things and like, you know, the funny ways that we have found to deal with that. But it's so very, very true from what you were saying, is that you know, there are those things that are internalized into all of us about all the different ways that we're intersectionally oppressed or raised up.
And I get that with my parents, a lot of it was a safety issue. Like, I think one of the things that I have done, like during, like I started off 2020 pretty mad at like some members of my family about like some attitude they hold. And by, I think somewhere mid 2020, I'm like, this was a safety thing. And I think one of the things that really brought it home was the fact I have a non-binary child. And I'm like, I am terrified sometimes for this kid's almost fearlessness in going to some spaces. It's like, no, you don't get it. We love you and upset, but it's like some spaces are dangerous to you. And when it clicked in my mind, it's like, you never thought to tell them that because they're a shade lighter than you. Their hair is straighter than yours. Mm-hmm. You never, ever, ever thought you would have this conversation with either one of your kids. And that like wrecked me for a while. Like, oh, fuck. Like, yeah. But yeah, so I learned to forgive when I kind of realized I had been doing some of the same shit. I didn't want to be, but it was, yeah, it was kind of a hard pill to swallow.
That internalization of like cishet whiteness as normal, I think is something that a lot of us here on the call could probably relate to. And is something that like, I think what you said just now is perfect. And it's true. It's that it's safety. You know, that's how we are as social creatures. Like we want to be like the whatever is considered normal, because then we'll be likely to be more accepted and seen less as a danger, as a threat. So we want to be what everybody wants us to be, and then you know anything that is a deviation from the norm is nope. We're just going to put that under the rug.
I think it's one of the reasons I love this show. It's called Owl House that I've been watching a lot with my darling youngest, who's non-binary. I'm like sitting there like, Ida? Oh my God, I love Ida. Like with like all my heart, I'm like, yes, Ida is me. I'm Ida and my darling youngest is Luz. And it's one of those like, because the whole thing is about like being weird and it stars a Latina, like a Latina nerd started talking like in the first 5 minutes, like I'm in, I want all the merch. I want everything to do because, you know, there was this whole thing of like, my parents were like, it's not that we don't love you, but please be normal. Like, you know, and there was like a lot of like, please be normal, please be whiter. Like, I remember my parents made me watch like a lot of old school Hollywood movies. And because I'm kind of a vocal chameleon, when I was young, I kind of talked like Judy Garland for a while and would use expressions like on the fritz or like I talked like a 1940s like gangster. It was like really embarrassing. And teachers made fun of me for it. Like, I remember being devastated about like people making fun of me. But I'm like, I thought that's what Americans talk like. And I was like, yeah, maybe watch something relevant like to the... I was a weird ass kid. So watching this with my child and like knowing they're weird in a different way that I'm like, got to wrap my head around. Like we've bonded so much over this. Even at the same time, they're like 17, like, yeah, see you mom, talk to my friends. Like this is one show we get together and be like, yes, we have connection on here. Okay. I'm going to stop now. See, I told you all I wouldn't stop talking once you got me started.
Is there any other space on the interwebs or any other kind of new type of space that you all have found that is celebrating community this year? Katrina?
Well, I was thinking about, because this is something I've been thinking about because of my own podcast, but I was thinking about how I think I've been finding my community to feed my spirituality outside of the spiritual community. I think a lot of my feeding my spirituality, because so much of my spirituality is tied to my creativity. I'm like, I'm pinning together things I'm sewing as we talk because I can't stop creating. But I see we got two people knitting here, crocheting here. But yeah, I tie that to my spirituality in so many ways, and creating something is part of my method of meditation and prayer. So I think my community, I've been finding on Ravelry and YouTube and, and Instagram in all these knitting circles and sewing circles that I've been participating in. So
I think that's wonderful, and that's something I certainly have been a big proponent of for a very long time on the Riot, is that, like, sometimes supporting your witchiness, sometimes supporting your pagan practice comes from outside of pagan practice. There are a lot of things that either just support our mindset of being witches, support our support the kinds of things that we do to feel pagan, to feel witchy, to connect with spirit in that way, acts of service, acts of devotion. And a lot of times those things don't exist inside of the community. I mean, we are more than just lighting the candles at our altar in a very serious way and saying our prayers and talking in Latin over, like, you know, faded leather bound tomes or something like that. We're a lot more than that. And I think that the more that we embrace some of that and realize that being pagan isn't just when you're being pagan, it's all the rest of it too. It's all the rest of it. And we can do all of those things and they're all pagan. It's fine. You know, exactly. Going to a Marvel movie is pagan. It's fine.
Well, and I, like, the tagline at the end of my episodes is, don't forget to create outside the circle, because, like, there's a little altar over here on the ground on a little stand here that I have not touched in probably a month. Because I don't
you're
actually,
a bad witch.
I'm a really bad witch. I'm a really bad witch. But through my sewing and my knitting, I meditate every single day. And, like, a bubble bath can be a spiritual act for me. And I'm far more apt to participate in that side of my spirituality than I am the organized little altar and the stack of witchy books and all that. Like, that's just not where I find my connection, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I did a little stupid video. I really hate them because you're sitting there pushing buttons and it's, I hate it.
Your meditation one?
I did.
I loved
made a little,
it.
Thanks. I made a little video about sort of my struggles with meditation because I just can't sit quietly and be quiet and still and process thoughts. That's just not me. It's not ever going to be me. I can't do it. But I do have ways to quiet my mind and to process thoughts and to even commune with spirit, to commune with deity, to feel a little bit more of that witchy woo-woo connection. And they very rarely happen when I'm sitting quietly. It can happen when I'm getting in a workout. It can happen when I'm cleaning or cooking or, you know, and there's some science behind that repetitive motion, that sort of mindless activity can connect you to, it can get you into that meditative state. And I think that it's just important to realize that some of those air quotes mundane activities can be just as witchy and just as pagan and just as woo-woo. Patty, you wrote the book on self-care. I feel like you probably have some thoughts on this.
You know, I was just going to chime in, like, so I'm completely incapable of sitting still. I mean, honestly, I've been in this chair for an hour and 15 minutes, and I'm just like, you should see what I'm doing over here. It's magic.
She's roasting a turkey under there. She's knitting a sock.
I'm making a scarf. Yeah, all kinds of stuff going on. One thing I found this year, because again, you know, we were kind of quarantined. I wasn't going anywhere, so I needed to develop, you know, sort of work on my hobbies. And I think a lot of things I do find spiritual are things that are not witchy things. You know, I can be vacuuming my floor. I'm still a witch, and that's still a meditative routine. One thing I've discovered a love of for myself this year is power tools. I've started, like, sanding and refinishing old furniture that I find, like, shitty stuff laying on the side of the road. I'll throw it in the back of my car, bring it home. I'll be like, I'm going to do something really cool with this. My dude got me a belt sander for my birthday because that's what I asked for. And oh my God, it's just little stuff like that. It's like you get dirty and sweaty and you're picking lint and sawdust out of your hair. But it's like at the end, hey, look, now I've got a dresser. This is so cool. It's that act of taking something that's nothing and turning it into something beautiful and that's created, like, from the ground up. So I'm really digging that. It's a lot of fun.
I I love that. So Corey is typing to us today, and he said in the chat, he said, it's probably a tangent, but I'd also say that finding information and inspiration from sources outside of purely pagan ones is so important. At least for me, a lot of folk magic comes, a lot of folk magic information comes from talking to community members and researching academic or historical sources, much more than some of the books coming from the BNP publishers. And that's sort of like been my whole bag for like a real long time. That so much of the good information and good sources aren't necessarily written specifically for a pagan audience, I think is what maybe the best way to say that. Like, it wasn't written just specifically for the folks who go out and seek pagan specific literature in mind. It's books on, you know, historical herbalism. It's books on in mythology. It's books on, you know, old Greek tragedies. I mean, there's just a lot of ways to gain knowledge and to sort of increase your scope. Does anybody have a non-pagan source of information that has enhanced their paganism? Also, science books, very valuable. Yes. Yeah, I've got a shelf. They're mostly... my husband's veterinary medicine books, though, so I don't get a lot of witchcraft out of those. It's a lot of like how to treat a lame horse or something. So that
could be valuable. So I've started following. There's a guy I've started following on YouTube. His name is Jackson Crawford, and Jackson Crawford looks like a cowboy. He's like a professor of Nordic studies or something at like the University of Denver or someplace like that. I mean, he looks like he should be out like wrangling a sheep or something. And he is just an absolutely amazing source of information for all things Norse mythology. You know, we always bump into these guys in the pagan community where they're like, yeah, I'm a Viking, check me out. It's like, no, this guy is just kind of like, here's the facts, here's what they did, here's how they spoke, and here's why all those other things you think about them were wrong. But he's fascinating to listen to because he's just sort of, like I said, he looks like a cowboy and he's talking about, you know, Norse mythology and speaking fluently in the language. And he's just, he's fabulous. And I could listen to him all day long.
I was really totally sad. I was really sad when I learned that Vikings didn't have the horn helmets, that's a thing we made up. I was real sad when I learned that. I was like, but How to Train Your Dragon makes it look so
right.
Fun.
I know. I would wear one of those.
I want a horny hat.
I would want to fix my hair, but you know.
We'll get you one. It'll be a little circlet with horns. There you go.
Yes.
Silk lined too, because you gotta preserve the curls. So they need to be silk lined.
Yes.
Team big hair, I'm with you.
Not necessarily like in tune of outside of with outside of paganism, but like that's one of the great things about hoodoo isn't, I have an altar and I should be focused on my altar. Hoodoo is a very much, you're learning as you move along. Oh, my computer is dying. You're learning as you go. So like hoodoo is, you're taking care of your plants and you are learning from that. You're the practice of putting yourself into that space of I'm gardening, but I'm also learning the science of it all. And the... what these plants do and the herbology of it, you're not, okay, I'm reading a book. You're learning from the land and you're learning through your instincts. And you're learning from listening to that inner spirit. If you're from Ifa's culture or Rhea, your higher self, you're learning through that. And you don't necessarily are, oh, I need a book. Or in a lot of senses with paganism, you have, oh, you go to your priestess or something like that. A lot of times you're just learning in that moment and through that. And that is something that you really don't see in the pagan community. A lot of times it's, oh, I need a book or I need a ritual or something big and grand versus, you know, like you're in the moment, I am giving birth or I'm cooking. And yes, paganism is cooking, but like, I don't need to make a pentagram into my pie. I can just be like, okay, these are my intentions into it. And this is hoodoo. This is magic. This is paganism. This is all of it. And it's not, bro, I'm doing something magical.
Yeah, I really resonate with that, Tiffany. I you know, anytime somebody's like, oh, talk about your practice or something, I'm like, I made that tea with a lot of thought in it. I thought into some pie. That roast had a lot of thought in it.
All that intention. Oh no, our keyword for 2020, manifesting. I'm manifesting.
A lot of thoughts about people that use manifest.
Oh, and they use it so a lot.
I begin to itch when I hear it.
That's become a little red flag alert word for me. Of like,
yes, I'm so overhearing it. I'm so overseeing it. I'm so over all of it. Just let it go. I hope in 2021 we have moved beyond. I think 2019 was all about intentions, because 2020 was, 2020 envision and blah blah blah, and then 2020 shat everywhere. So now it's like, everything is manifesting. Manifest. I pray that 2021, we just let it go. It just, what happens. We are embracing reality that life sucks and things happen. And we learn that magic is in everything that we do and doesn't have to be capitalized.
Morgane, I know that you had your hand raised a moment ago. And I apologize for mispronouncing your name. I promise I would have practiced that better.
No, it's fine.
But you had some thoughts as well.
Yeah, because, I'm kind of not making stuff up, but there's no books on my path. I'm studying, working, doing French-Canadian traditional magic. And my first source is like the American Journal of Folklore and old issues. Like, I have to dig through archives to old journal, to some really, really racist books. Mm. Like, there are some really bad things that have been written, but those sources are invaluable because not a lot has been written. A lot has changed from them, from a time where we were more Catholic than we are now. So there was more magic than there is now. And what is still there, of course, has evolved in one way or another. And so if I want to go to the roots of everything and make parallels and don't appropriate, I have to go back to really old articles and have, I have like 100 years of articles to go through and a few, very, very few books. So that's interesting.
If you ever want to publish a blog on that, I would love to read it and promote the heck out of it, because I think
funny that... you say that, because I have one.
A list of resources that, it can be difficult to find information that isn't appropriated or that isn't, grounded in horrible, racism, xenophobia, transphobia, that kind of thing. Anything that you want to share, please send me the link. I would be happy to promote the heck out of it.
I will.
Good. Anybody else, any interesting new sources of information that have been positive for you this year?
I think one thing that a lot of us have learned is that if your spirituality isn't just something you do like for those 2 hours on a Saturday afternoon with your coven, if it really is part of your life, like you said, everything becomes a spiritual action. I don't have to carve a pentagram into the top of my pie. I don't have to make the mustard sigil in the sandwich when I put it together. But you can do those things, but you don't have to. That's the thing. It's like, if you're fully immersed in your practice so that everything you do is an aspect of your spirituality, and we've talked about this before, I do a lot of ancestor work, which that's a whole nother bucket of fish, but I spend a lot of time talking to my ancestors and I spend a lot of time learning about them. For me, I was up till about midnight last night looking at census records from the 1840s. For me, that was a spiritual act because it brings me that much closer and it ties it all into these people that I've been practicing with for the better part of 3 decades. So anything can be your spiritual action. It's just a question of, do I have to walk around with a necklace that has a pentacle the size of a dinner plate? I could, but I don't need to, because I've gotten to the point where every action is meaningful to me, because if it's not meaningful, I generally try to shy away from it.
Well, and sometimes, again, it just goes back to who are you doing it for? Are you doing it for other people to recognize, to be seen as something, to be seen as a super witch? You know, I am the superest super witch that ever super witched.
Super.
Is that performative? is this performative? Or is it something that truly rings true to you? And you know what? That can be true on both. If what rings true to you is a Flava Flav size pentacle, and you know, and the trappings and the silver jewelry and the pewter and then this, if your version of paganism is a camp aesthetic, do it. It's fine. That's valid. That's good.
Go
because you're
it.
Doing it for yeah. yourself. As long as you are doing not Flava Flav, girl. Listen, first of all, don't get me started on MTV reality shows, because we will go down. God, we will go down a Tila Tequila rabbit hole, and
no,
I will
we will not.
That's what
we're not going to do.
But or Corey put in the chat, Stevie Nicks, Dolly Parton. I mean, but there are folks out there that have this entire camp thing, but we love them for it because it's authentic to themselves, and we know that they aren't doing it for other people. And so I think that it takes a little bit of time and maturity sometimes to recognize that that pentacle was not for you. That pentacle was for someone else. You were putting on a costume, and it's okay to recognize that and then put it away. If you want to hold on to it, put it in the special box.
Sure.
Put it in the special box, put it away. If you want to hold I mean, it out sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, the pagan that I was at 18 is very different from the pagan I am at 52. But that doesn't mean that either of them is more or less valid than the other.
Also, what are you doing that you look like that at 52?
I drink the tears of my enemies.
That's valid. That's good. I appreciate that. I love it.
Thank you, though.
anything else on this topic? Folks with kids or folks that care for kids, how has this year been for you? I think that's all of you, actually, because Katrina's a nanny and all of the rest of you are parents. So I'm the old, I've got dogs and cat and some, I got fur babies. But folks with kids, how has this year been for you? And it doesn't have to be a witchy thing. Just how has this been caring for children in this pandemic?
So on the one hand, I'm super happy that I love both my kids. And I'm actually, I feel like, you know, it's one of those, I'm really glad we all get along, like really well. I've seen marriages and relationships fall apart. And then I realize it's like, you know what? It's like, I'm very cool with my dorky husband and my goofy kids. And we have really good talks. And if part of me feels a little selfish because it's like, I got my son for an extra year that I would not have had. He is a student at University of Pittsburgh, and it's been awesome talking to him about, because he wants to write too. So one of the small blessings is like talking shop, and like, you know, him just saying, and the best is like, sometimes he's like, holy crap, I'm growing up into you, mom, aren't I? It's like, well, yeah, I clearly you're the one who grows up to be me, and Roz is growing up to be, you know, dad. That's how this is working. It's like, we're that has been wonderful. My darling youngest has some issues around anxiety, and we've had a lot of really good talks about that. I think I've had to come to terms with some of my high-functioning anxiety and depression issues to help them kind of realize, hey, some of this stuff you're feeling, this is normal, and maybe I felt it in a different way than you do. You know, I'm feeling it. And I think having the time and space, because we are locked in here, there's no place to go, where we have these conversations has been a good thing. I mean, I really wish this pandemic hadn't happened, because sure. Both of them need to be, like, my son is 21 and should be out there, you know, I mean, not that he's like a party guy. He, like, his idea of, like, you know, it's the same idea of partying mine would be. It's like, I'm going to go with the anime club and we're going to just make fun of terrible movies. I'm like, yes, son, this is what I would do too. Maybe with a little alcohol, but got to have the anime. And my, you know, youngest should be out like driving to their friend's house, to the mall, to do these things. And they, you know, I should be seeing less of them. So it's been like, I love having them here. And I know this is because they're going to be gone soon. So part of me is like, I'm such a selfish bitch because I love having them here. But I'm even like crying, like I'm going to miss them when they're gone.
It's cool when you like your kids, though. I mean, my children are all adults. The oldest has been out of the house for many years. She's married. I have a grandbaby. The younger two just turned 21 last week, and they've been splitting their time between here and the college town where they live, which is 45 minutes away. And I really like them as human beings. And thank God, because there are times when we've been cooped up together for weeks at a time. What if they were terrible? I'd be like, ugh, I don't want those people here. But I like them. They're fun. They're good people. Like, I would be their friends if I was 21, you know, which has been nice. I can't imagine what it's like to try to raise small children. My heart goes out to all the people who have school age kids, where they're trying to manage Zoom classrooms, the mom and dad are trying to get their work done, and the baby's crying, and so-and-so won't do her homework. Oh my God, my brain would explode. I don't know how those folks do it, and hats off to them.
Morgane, yeah, I've seen small children this morning. It looks like you've got some small children in that house. How has it been with small children?
It's been interesting. Like, it's been hard and like the best at the same time, because they're always there, so this can be a bit hard, but at the same time they are always there, so it's great. I can share their lives. Like, I've never stopped completely working, but I had days off, and I could spend time with my daughter, who's going to turn 6 in March. And those years, like, they were the end of the toddler years, the end of the pure joyous years. And I could share my days with her, share weeks with her. And I had time to learn what my son likes now. And he's growing so fast. He's going to be 9 in a month. He's going to be 9. And I learned so much about my kids through this time, but having them all day around can be hard too. But I'm choosing to see the positive, and I think they didn't affect them too much. They didn't get too anxious. They had fun. Like, they're back at school since September, so they're seeing their friends, and I think they're doing good. My hope is that in 20 years they're gonna turn and say, that wasn't so bad. What are you talking about? Like, I had fun, I could play video games. This is my hope for them. Hope this is what they're gonna remember of this pandemic. And they're very active.
You look like you've got something as well.
Yes, well, you know, I homeschool, and I've already talked about the bat craziness of having them constantly here. But, don't look like that, Nene. Okay, so obviously they're already constantly here. She gave me the face. It's not like they're already constantly here. It's more so there's no outlet for them. So, like, it's been hard, and there was certain times as I stare at the stain on my ceiling where, you know, you're like, you would think because we're used to being at home all the time, you would have those ground rules and you would, you know, they get to know. And then kids just spontaneously do random things. Like, we're going to go swimming in the bathroom with no pool. They just turned on the water and let it flow. So they flooded the entire bathroom, and you're just like, this is quarantine. What are we going to do? Because there's no plumber that can come out. And, you know, you spaz for like a good 5 minutes, and I left the house and I said, I'm not dealing with this. And I told my husband to deal with it. But quarantine is definitely harder with kids. I love them, and I've grown to know more about them than I ever thought I needed to know about my children. My daughter, I've talked to her a lot more about her anxiety and her social anxiety, and we've learned more about character development, because, you know, when your kids are away, you don't really have to deal with their character as much. Like, I mean, obviously you deal with their character because it's home behavior, but like outside behavior, they have that vent and they can develop it away from you. And it's like, I didn't realize how much character development my children needed until they were here all the time, never leaving, having me to entertain them constantly, as my daughter laughs at me.
more so I'm agreeing.
She is agreeing while laughing at me about the character development that was lacking. Because, you know, when you're, even though you're homeschooled, you just don't have to deal with certain things. So 2020 children, 6, 8, and 13, help us all.
Katrina.
I have had the opposite experience as a longtime childcare provider, because I have not been around children since March, which is incredibly weird for me and has left a really weird hole in my life that I'm filling with this puppy. Really, that's really what's happening with the puppy. But I, you know, I've been in one way or another, I've been taking care of children basically since I was 9. I'm the oldest of 5 kids, and I had kind of parents who were, my father's disabled and my mother worked multiple jobs. So I've been taking care of children since I was 9 years old. And this is the longest I've ever gone without children to entertain on a regular basis.
Well, and we should say you're a nanny.
I'm a nanny. Yes. I'm a nanny now. I've been a foster parent a couple of times over. And so for the last 4 years, I've been a full-time nanny until March. And the baby that I've been taking care of turned 4 in May. And we still, every Friday, we meet on FaceTime and I read him books and we color together. And I got him and his brother the same. I've been working on this one adult coloring book for a while, and they had kept wanting to color in it and I wouldn't let them. So at the beginning of the pandemic, I bought them each a copy of the same coloring book, and we color in our matching coloring books every Friday, and we compare our pictures and see how everybody's doing. And it's been really awesome, but not having kids in my life on a daily basis is just so weird. it's left this weird hole that I'm definitely feeling hardcore. So
what have been your sources of joy this year? What have been your sources of comfort? I know a lot of boy, I know that Netflix account's probably getting a real good workout. Is there a movie, a TV show, a book, a hobby you've picked up, something in particular that has been a source of joy or a source of comfort for you?
I go first?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Okay. Joy has been, I've always been like an anime manga person, but like the amount of anime and manga I have read and consumed. And because it's quarantine, I get to read even more, because all the translators have nothing else to do but sit at home and translate manga. That has been like my ultimate joy, as my daughter is shaking her head at me.
Romy is asking you for recommendations.
I will have a list. I have like a whole, there's a lot.
Now, are you a Junji Ito person? Am I getting that name right? The one with like the weird circles and spirals and stuff?
Wait, what?
No, okay. This is, hold on.
Yes, Ito.
Yes, yeah, horror manga. Okay, I had that right. Yes. Junji Ito.
I'm not super into horror and gore. Like, it just depends on like the premise. Like right now, there's what is it on Crunchyroll? It's Jujutsu something. Oh, I just watched the episode last night. I forgot the full name. But anywho, it has gore and it has like horror and stuff in it, but it's not overtly where I'm just like, y'all just doing extra stuff at this point. But like, I love manga. I love reading it. I'm a particular person of Yao, which is BL, boy love, gay manga, and that's just my ish. I love it. So there's one that you should read, right? It's called Here You Are, and it is amazing. Like, they just completed it, and it is just chef's kiss amazing.
I think I've probably watched Yuri on Ice like 3 times this year.
Yes. Yes.
It's just such a warm, squishy, fuzzy.
And that's how you, Here You Are is in manga. It is just, it gives you all the person. It has obviously different couples and stuff, and it's just a beautiful story.
Oh.
A beautiful story. You will absolutely love it. But aside, did you ask me? My daughter just asked me.
Listen. Listen, I need your mom for a few more minutes, so you got to be good. Patty, I think you had your hand raised as well. What's a source of comfort for you?
Yeah, so back in the spring when all of this started, sorry, my dog is like decided he wants things off my desk. When all of this started, my friend circle, which there's about a dozen of us that normally do stuff, you know, we go to concerts together, we go road tripping, we, you know, meet up at people's houses for cookouts, all of that was off the table. So we've got sort of a standing 7 o'clock Saturday night Zoom room meetup where we all just kind of get up and, you know, we do this and we just yap with each other because we can't see each other. We can't, and you know, this has been going on for months. We don't do it every Saturday and not everybody is on there every Saturday, but it's like a standing regular appointment. Anybody who wants to hop in can do it. It's pretty amazing to watch somebody actually like pass out drunk on Zoom in real time. I've never seen that happen before, but it's become a thing. So that's been kind of cool because it allows me the social interaction that I need and that I crave, but that we can't have. But something else that's really been interesting, you know, you talked about the Netflix account getting a workout. So up until this year, I've never really been a TV watcher. Like I haven't had cable in probably 10 years. Like I just don't, I mean, and I would go weeks without actually turning on the screen. So this year I've actually discovered the joy of binging for the first time in my life.
That needs to be a book. The joy of binging.
The joy of binging. Marie Kondo says, no. So, and I know that I'm really super late to the party because everybody else does this, but like, I just, and I can only binge one show at a time. Like I can't binge watch multiple shows.
Yeah, I can't, I get fixated. I need,
the way the brain works. Yeah. Right. So, but I've discovered all these shows that I had like never even heard of because I don't have cable. It's like Person of Interest. I don't know what that is, but there's 120 episodes. Let's watch it. And you know, and it's been great. So it's just little simple things like that. And the nice thing about TV, which the rest of the world knows, and I just discovered recently, is that you can have it on while you do other things. So I can multitask. And that way I feel like I'm still being productive, which I need to feel like. So just little stuff like that. I mean, I know it sounds ridiculous to get excited about Netflix or Hulu, but here I am. So.
Welcome to our world, Patty.
I know.
Join us, one of us, one of us.
Have you discovered the calming effects of various British baking shows?
Mm. So I'm a big fan of British costume dramas. Okay? So like anything with corsets and top hats, usually there's a murder in a small village. It's always the vicar who did it. I'm learning these things. I will move on to baking shows eventually.
Okay, so I need you to get The Repair Shop. I need you to get some Great British Bake Off. I need you to get yes, it. What other it. Calming? Oh, okay. There's one. It's not on Netflix. It's on Hulu. And I forced several other people on this call to watch it. It's called Making It. Okay. It's on NBC and it's hosted by Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman. And it's as close to Great British Bake Off calming reality television as I think Americans have gotten yet. And it's about makers. Okay. It's people that like build stuff and knit stuff and make stuff. And it's just, and it's so calming and it's so nice.
It sounds delightful.
It's so pleasant. Gosh. I love pleasant, calming reality shows where like it's a competition, but we're not really competitive. Like it's great. I love it.
Right. Sometimes I'll just put on like old Bob Ross reruns and have that on in the background.
Oh, well, yes.
That's like my Zen jam. Like you don't even have to look. He's making the happy little trees. You know, I'm like, this is my happy space. This is my calmness. I will definitely add the British baking shows to my list. But like I said, I can only watch one thing at a time.
Yes.
So I'll you get
don't,
to it.
Don't worry. You'll
It'll
get
always
there.
Be you, there. Yeah. I know. I'm so excited.
Katrina?
Yeah. Making it at least once a month, somebody messages me, one of my friends messages me and says, I just started watching this great show. You have to watch it. And I'm like, you guys, I was like, all into that show before it even started. Like, really?
Because
it's all good.
I saw a trailer and I was like, all of you need to watch this.
Yeah.
I bully my friends.
On a regular basis.
I bully my friends. Watch this.
But so I have found myself rewatching things and finding great comfort in rewatching my old loves like Buffy and The West Wing. And The West Wing? You haven't watched The West Wing?
I've never seen The West Wing.
Holy shit, you've never watched The West Wing?
Who are you?
You are gonna
even?
Love it.
Oh my god, you have to watch it.
It is so up your alley. You're gonna love it.
I'm gonna watch TV and I've seen The West Wing. Like, okay, I legitimately don't even watch it.
Okay, so I feel bullied now. I feel attacked.
just a little.
I didn't watch it either, so it's okay, Farley.
Oh, I just, well, thank I don't you. Think Romy would enjoy it as much, but I think you would love it.
I can't wait.
Wait, so there's no aliens or spaceships or, like, you know, yeah, anime sword
fights? It was in the 90s, right, and I was, like, watching X-Men, and I was a baby, so...
There is one episode when some people come to the White House to try to convince the administration that there are aliens invading, but there aren't actually aliens in the end. But it's a great show. You'll love it. But, yeah, and I've just been, like, rewatching everything, and then I love my graphic novels, and I've reread... Now that the library is reopened again and I can actually get like a curbside pickup, I've been rereading the Lumberjanes series.
That's a lovely
because I just
series.
Adore the Lumberjanes. It is. I love it so much. My niece is into it and she's like 12 and she will randomly send me messages with like the whole pledge from the Lumberjanes in them. And
I think
really
he just
cute.
Made Corey's day. He's like blowing up the chat about some Lumberjanes.
The Lumberjanes are the best. It's the same artist that did She-Ra. So if you like She-Ra, you'd like Lumberjanes. Mm-hmm.
So I want to ask, as we sort of wind down our time together, I know that this has been a big year. It's been a difficult year. It's been a hard year. We've talked about how for the community, there's been some tough conversations. We've talked about how for parents, it's been tough. We've talked about how for just people in general, it's been sort of kind of hard to reorient your life. But I want to ask, what has been the one best thing that you have seen advance in the world this year? And I'd like to go first because it's my show and I can. So I have seen a massive uptick in non-toxic masculinity this year. And it's brilliant and it's wonderful and it's bold. And I have seen straight men tell each other they love each other. I love you. You know, one of my new favorite podcasts is Smartless. And it's got Jason Bateman and multiple other, you know, white guy hosts, but they end every episode telling each other they love each other. You know, I love you. I miss you guys, blah, 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 blah. But like the number of times that I have seen that kind of thing be expressed in culture generally this year, I don't know if it's just like, you know, when you buy a red Nissan and suddenly everybody owns a red Nissan. And I don't know if it's like, I'm looking for it, so I'm seeing it. And if it is, great. Thank you, brain, for tricking me into thinking that that's what is happening. But I just feel like there is this uptick in non-toxic masculinity, in upholding the idea that men can tell each other they love each other, that you don't have that what a man is and what a man looks like, that sort of gender construct is really breaking this year, or bending, or being reoriented, redefined. And I think that is the one best thing that I have personally seen happen this year. Who else?
Broadway musicals available for streaming.
Yes, Hamilton.
Absolutely. I, and as a like huge Broadway theater nerd, like I said, my thesis is stage plays. I'm a playwright. Like I live in Maine, so I'm a few hours away from New York. I don't get to see many shows, and having them available to watch on my TV or on my iPad is just incredible. And it opens up such a world for, you know, the kid in middle America whose parents don't want him to be into theater because it's going to make him gay or whatever. You know, I think it's such a great little thing for everyone.
Who else?
I'm going to steal what Corey wrote. Oh, sorry.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Morgan. Sorry. You had your hand up.
I saw the whole scientific community march together through a single goal this year and make a lot of things available and free to other researchers. We've seen how vital science that's been in university and that is not for profit is. And this to me is that it was really, really great to see. Like everybody just eye on the prize and working together.
Absolutely. We've certainly seen some triumphs of modern science this year. Romy, I think you were going to be cheerleading Corey as well.
Definitely seconding what Corey said. He's talking about, like, you know, how amazing children's animation and cartoons have been in fostering, you know, diversity and empathy. And it's one of the best things I've seen recently. Like, and I've been an animation nut from way back. Like when I was a kid, like I could tell you, it's like, oh, you know, Tex Avery directed that one, or that definitely looks like a Chuck Jones one. Like I was like, you know, like Matt. So watching the evolution of cartoons and how they've become this, you know, really diverse and like stuff. I mean, Steven Universe, man, like that just blows my mind. And that's one of those, like, I'm trying to get my husband to watch. It's like, I know this looks weird, but I tell you, those aliens are like some of the best parents I have ever freaking seen. They are wonderful parents. It's like, I aspire to the level of patience of, like, you know, like the Crystal Gems when they were like bringing up Steven in some of the earlier episodes. They're so good. And like She-Ra, Owl House, all of that. I just see this is what's feeding our kids today. And it's going to lead to a more understanding and accepting population that's comfortable with talking about emotions. These guys are going to be cycle breakers of, you know, where it's, you know, my generation still has embarrassment about like admitting to certain issues. These kids are going to break, you know, down things, break down walls. And it's amazing. And I hope that as an old lady, I'll be like, yes, I was there at the beginning and now I have seen it to its fruition. I can die peacefully. So, yeah.
I love, you know, I think that we have to give credit where credit is due. I think that this sort of modern push in animation wouldn't have happened if My Little Pony Friendship is Magic had not been as wildly successful as it had been. I think people saw that show and were like, oh, this is a dumb show about, this is a My Little Pony reboot, but it was like queer and it was soft and it was safe and it was diverse and inclusive and it pushed so many boundaries and like it paved the way for She-Ra, it paved the way for some of these other shows. So yeah, I see your Pinkie Pie mug.
It's actually Roz's. I stole it. We steal it back from each other all the time. It's our united mug, but yeah.
Anyone else, their best thing that's happened this year?
I think just some of the, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, go ahead, go ahead.
Oh, I think just some of the small acts of kindness we've seen. You know, I said earlier that 2020 brought out the worst in us, but I think it also brought out the best in some people. You know, we're seeing people just doing small things, you know, even little stuff like there's a guy around the corner from me who had like his 100th birthday back in August. Dude turned 100 years old. And his kids came over and brought him out, sat him in the driveway under a sunbrella and in a chair with a cooler full of drinks. And people from all over the place drove by honking and waving and holding up signs and thanking him for his military service, all this other stuff. It was just really cool, you know, stuff like that. But also we've seen a lot of people in the creative space who are giving their gifts for free. There are people who are teaching painting classes on Zoom. Mm-hmm. They're teaching music lessons. There's a guy who's doing like, you know, here's how to play every song ever made by Metallica on your guitar. Just tune into my YouTube channel. You know, just stuff like that, you know, and people are just giving of themselves because they can and because it's good. And that's just been, it's been incredibly comforting because there's been so much bullshit in the world this year. It's so glorious to see people doing kind. And I like that a lot.
It is glorious to see people doing kind. that is such a perfect note. Tiffany, I'll give you the last word.
Oh crap. So you ain't supposed to hear that. So like for me, just social media in general, like seeing so many people come together and like just being able to, everybody can vent and it's not like, oh my God, here comes this person venting again, like how we usually do if it was any other time, where people are just like, they're constantly whining and constantly complaining. And it's like, everybody gets it. And now we're all just like this big fun clubhouse of we can go anywhere and we can just like say what we have to say. And everybody there and can say, yes, we get you. We love you, you know, and they're expressing that familiarity that you necessarily didn't really get before. Like now we really are seeing the community and what we didn't get in social media before. It was more like a low key, a lot of bullying. And now it's like, okay, you actually can go in there and you're finding family and you can expand yourself And it's like, it's not exhausting. You're actually finding you, or finding different layers to yourself, or finding new people. I just love how social media now is, especially with TikTok, which talk, my Instagram, obviously, like just being able to like really just coming together. And it's like, we all are here and we all get it.
I do love that there's been a greater focus on just sort of human community this year. Well, folks, that's the end of our time. I want to thank all of you so very, very much for being here. Lilith, who left us earlier, but Patty, thank you for being one of our special surprise guests. Thank you guys so much for supporting Inciting a Riot this year. The show wouldn't have continued without your support. So thank you for joining. Thank you for letting me sort of give you this fun little surprise. Thank you this morning. Thanks to Corey for popping on and being so verbose in the chat. I'm going to leave you, but as always, I will leave you with love and light. Firelight.